from standpoint of nutrient wise and nutrient availability, we have to maintain. We've done a pretty good job in the industry talking about crude protein and degradable protein. So it's the degradable protein that we really got to pay attention to. And sometimes, depending upon what curveball Mother Nature throws at you, you may have to go out there and do some supplementation with degradable protein to really optimize your fiber digestibility, because that's what we're trying to do, right?
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm your host, Brandy Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we're joined by Dr. Kip Kargis, an Oklahoma native who obtained his Master's of Science in Animal Nutrition from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and then returned to Oklahoma State to obtain his PhD in Animal Nutrition, and he has over 30 years of industry experience. Dr. Kargis is currently the North American Technical Service Manager at Lalamond Animal Nutrition, and his work focuses on micronutrients and their role in microbiome gut health in relationship to total immune system wellness. Dr. Kargis has also worked with nutrient encapsulation, amino acid ration balancing, and the metabolizable protein system. Dr. Kargis, thank you for joining us today on this episode sponsored by Lalamond Nutrition. How are you today?
Hey, I'm fantastic. Great to be with you. I'm in Abilene, Texas, where we're actually getting a little rain for a change, so that's kind of nice.
That is nice. I bet they're happy to have that down there. It is also raining here where I live in southeast Kansas, but I believe that's probably much more happens a lot more often than it does in that neck of the woods. So, well, thank you again for being here. We appreciate your partnership. To start off with, I mentioned a little bit about your background, but if you could just bring those of us up to speed on how you got involved in the beef industry and your kind of cattle industry and career thus far, that would be great.
Sure. Fantastic. I started out my young career being very interested in veterinary science, becoming a veterinarian, as a lot of us do. And science was a high piece of my interest. And as I got going through my education, I had some people say, hey, you gotta look at this nutrition thing. It's pretty interesting. So the further I got into it, the further I went with it. And next thing you know, I'm going for my PhD at Oklahoma State, then going to industry for a few years, did some teaching as well. But for the most part, my industry career has spanned kind of like you said, 25, 30 years, which is kind of hard for me to say at this point in time, but it is what it is, right? So, yeah, I basically have worn tech support hat, tech sales, R&D type activities. And then the latter part of my career, I've been doing, managing some technical groups as well. So, and that's what I currently do today for Lalamond, tech service manager for North America. Live in Abilene, Texas, like I said.
I thought you still were in Oklahoma, so the Abilene thing, then you really like want the rain down there.
Yeah.
A high-functioning rumen drives herd performance, gut health, and profitability. Levucel SC by Lalamond Animal Nutrition is the only naturally occurring rumen-specific active dry yeast probiotic designed to optimize rumen function, boost fiber digestion, and help you get more out of your native rangeland or pasture. No matter how you supplement your herd, include Levucel SC to help your cows grow bigger calves. Discover the right formulation for your herd at ChooseLevucelSC.com.
Well, there's, I think the storm, I looked at the radar and it is going across all through the plains. So we're all of our cattle, our people here in cattle country are getting a drink for sure. So, I think as we're going into spring, like we're kind of in the middle of spring calving here, for myself as a fall calving herd, you know, we're just coming off of weaning, but others may not have weaned yet. Maybe you can kind of set the stage and introduce the importance for us of supporting your herd through that calving, weaning, regardless of what time you're kind of at.
Yeah, for sure. Those are critical periods. I always try to break down the year basically into quarters, and you got to manage the quarter kind of like a football game. If we're looking at that from a cow-calf standpoint, you got the calving cycle, very critical. You got a 60-day window in there that you're hopefully calving in, and at the same time, you're trying to get your cows back to a little bit of condition to where you can go into breeding and maybe decent shape. And then at the same time, maybe you got an animal that's is a young animal, for example, a replacement heifer or a three-year-old, which I always contend is probably your most challenging animal because they're shedding teeth and still trying to finish growing, you know, those types of metabolic things are going on. So it's a very critical time. And as you flow into that, right, that point in time there, it's tough to make an adjustment at that point and change your trajectory, if you will, on what that cow is going to be able to do until you hit green grass. And so you kind of almost got to set that up in the fall or early spring in your situation where you're going into point where you're going to start weaning your calves and make sure you've got the right supplementation program going into those conditions to where you're going to try to maybe put a little bit of weight back on that cow and see what she can do when she gets into calving.
For sure. Yeah, they are itching to get that great, to get to grass. I have been putting cows in. I don't know how they're getting out. I just have no idea where they're finding these holes in this fence. I have walked line, but I am putting them back in almost daily. So, but if you could speak a little bit, why is nutrition management during these stages so crucial for herd health? You know, why are we, for those who may not be as well versed in nutrition, why is that step up plan so important several months in advance?
Yeah. So from the standpoint, if we go into, you've weaned your animal, so now your cow's dried off and she's, I'm going to talk more along the lines of this second gestation period, mm-hmm. and going into third gestation. So those are time frames where you kind of have an opportunity to maintain or maybe slightly improve body condition on that animal if you've got the right nutrition program, and depends upon your objectives and those types of things. But we all want to go into calving with that ultimate body condition score, you know, 5, maybe pushing 6 a little bit. You darn sure don't want to have a lot of cows going in at a body condition score 4, mm-hmm. Through second and third gestation, because at that point in time, that animal is designed to get a calf on the ground, right? And so she's going to sacrifice her body stores, if you will, yep. and put everything into gestation. But once that calf hits the ground, then that kind of does a 180 for us, and we go back to, okay, now I'm going to save myself, and the yeah. calf is going to do his own thing, you know. So that nutrition program sets itself up for, you know, 6 months in advance, if you will, in terms of making sure we're going to have a pleasant experience when you get to that calving interval.
Put mask on yourself before putting mask on others, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is there ever an instance where grass, I mean, ideally, I want my pastures to be all that our cows need. And we run stockers as well. But is there ever an instance where green grass is limited and isn't meeting the nutritional needs of cows or stockers?
Sure. That's a fantastic question. I think we got to back up a little bit here, and we all have to acknowledge how much our genetics have changed in our cow herd today from, say, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago. You know, we have a tremendous genetic potential in the animals that are out there today. So the question then becomes, how are we going to optimize, if you will, performance on that animal? Can we nutritionally do it just with green grass, for example, to your question? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be kind of challenging because the potential for growth on these animals is just huge. Mm-hmm. And that's before we ever start talking about the type of forage that you're on, you know, maybe it's summer pasture type situation. Well, what's the passage rate? What's the digestibility of that particular forage early on in the spring? You know, you can look at the back end of your cows and you're going to see a lot of green smears on those rear ends, kind of like a green windshield, right? You know, we hit a lot of bugs concept. And that is a true indicator that you've got a pretty highly digestible forage at that point and extremely fast passage rate. So then it becomes a question on, do I have enough time in the rumen mm-hmm. for the bugs to optimize and really degrade all that forage? And oftentimes we don't. And so therein lies the challenge that I think we have to start looking for other tools that we could put in our toolbox today that will really help us in those situations.
Can you suggest how producers can identify some of those, like, maybe not shortcomings isn't the right word, but some of those challenges or gaps? I see them early, and then how to adjust their program nutrition accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so some of your, obviously your biggest indicator is going to be body condition score, monitoring that as you go through the year. But overall, weather patterns is another thing. You got to monitor that and see what, if you're falling short on moisture, that's going to drive a lot of business decisions pretty quick for us. And you can attest to that.
Right.
But from standpoint of nutrient wise and nutrient availability, we have to maintain, we've done a pretty good job in the industry talking about crude protein and degradable protein. So it's the degradable protein that we really got to pay attention to. And sometimes, depending upon what curveball Mother Nature throws at you, you may have to go out there and do some supplementation with degradable protein to really optimize your fiber digestibility, because that's what we're trying to do, right?
Sure.
There are some tools out there that, you know, probably are not known to a lot of people. Lalamon has some of these tools, and yeast digestibility influences fiber digestibility. These types of concepts are out there, and they're fairly new probably to the beef industry. So it's something that is available, and I would encourage producers to kind of look outside the box a little bit.
I mean, if someone doesn't see these problems in time, right, or doesn't do a bang-up job of looking at BCS and paying attention to that in advance, you know, what are some of those impact of having a nutrient deficiency on both the cow herd and the calves, you know, that they're carrying there during gestation?
Obviously, weaning weight comes to mind, but what's my weaning weight per cow exposed? That's a critical number. I think a lot of us probably can easily calculate and figure out, you know, what does that look like? And that needs to be, depending on when you wean and how many days, those types of things come into play. But you ought to have a pretty good idea what those animals should be doing for you. If you're not hitting that body condition score, obviously we've talked about that a lot, but what are some of the other things that, obviously, pasture conditions or mineral intake, for example, are we cutting our mineral with salt to control that intake on that mineral? Those are things that kind of can come back to haunt us a little bit later. Minerals, I think people think of them as, you know, kind of like this black box type concept, but they are extremely important in the overall metabolism of the animal. You can take, for example, zinc and copper, for they play a huge role in the production of enzymes for the body. And, you know, there's indications, you know, they might be involved in close to 300 different pathways. So if you limit some of these key trace minerals, are you going to see that every day? No, you're not going to see that. Are you going to see that at weaning time? For sure. Is that calf going to be set up to go into weaning conditions and maybe not come down with BRD or some other thing there? Yeah, that's maybe not going to happen for us.
I think that's so crucial. Is, I mean, I remember it's been a while since I've been in grad school and undergrad, but I do remember just that really being hammered home, is that, like, mineral is such a foundation. It's not just, not just throw some salt out there, right? Like it is a program, and it needs to be a consistent part of your program. Regardless if you've got a cow herd, if you're running stockers, you know, we're seed stock operators. So it just really, I just remember that being like hammered home in, like, remember that very, very clearly.
And a lot of people don't even realize, look at it this way, when you break down the cost of that mineral, it's probably one of your cheaper forms of supplements.
That's true.
Right down to it.
Yeah. When the pallet gets delivered to my house, I don't feel like it's.
Sticker shock, right?
But as if you average it out over the number of head we got and all that, then if it's a small investment
for sure,
something that you can very easily see, you know, at weaning and throughout the lifetime and at breedback and things like that. I probably have undiagnosed anxiety, to be completely honest. And so there's a point to this. And so I'm already thinking about next winter, like, are we going to have enough grass? Are we going to have enough hay? Like, you know, we're planning, it's just barely spring and we're already thinking about what we're going to be feeding in the fall and the winter and such like that. And so I'm sure there are long-term benefits of, like, planning for herd profitability that far in advance and, like, kind of forgive, you know, springing forward to think about the fall. Can you explain a bit more eloquently than I am about why it's important to begin thinking about feeding for the fall and winter right now, even though we just started spring?
Oh, great question again. So if you look at it from standpoint again, you run your cows through the summer, they're milking. If they do their job, they're probably going to come in a little bit light on body condition score, right? They're going to sacrifice some of that going into the milk. So now we've got a weaned calf. That's a separate discussion. You got your cow over here. She's glad to get rid of that calf, and she's going to get turned back out onto maybe medium quality, low quality forages. Time you hit November, it's nothing but pretty much low quality forages. So how are we going to move that body condition score becomes very critical, because that's really poor fiber digestibility. And so if you're looking ahead like you are, not only do you have to be thinking about, well, what's my fiber source going to be, right? It's probably, how am I going to feed the bugs in the rumen? And that's that degradable protein conversation that we kind of alluded to here a minute ago. Those are two different conversations that end up marrying up, that's going to influence your overall digestibility of that fiber. Because if think of fiber, like, okay, we talked about crude protein, degradable protein, fiber goes down that same pathway a little bit. You got crude fiber. We can break down that crude fiber into different fractions, and we talk about NDF, ADF. And so when you send off a forage analysis, you oftentimes get back TDN. Everybody understands TDN, but you also need to be looking at ADF and NDF. NDF digestibility is what you really want to focus on, because that is going to tell us a lot in terms of how big a challenge it is going to be in terms of that animal digesting that particular forage.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the fall there's not a lot of high quality forage available in the fall. And I hope that it's okay to beg to differ a little bit. I'm not going to play devil's advocate, but I live in fescue country.
Oh, you're lucky.
I mean, fescue, you it's a not a love-hate relationship, but it has its downsides. But yes, we fall calve. And so right when we get done calving, if we get a little bit of some October rain or late September rain, that we get another boost of green grass. So it's kind of right. As long as it doesn't snow. So we get a little bit of high quality forage there at the end of the fall. But I want to circle back to something. I want to come back in a little bit and talk about like these decisions in the spring and how they relate to fall productivity. But you mentioned rumen health. I think that's obviously super important. The rumen is so crucial to so many functions. And so if you could speak a bit about like right now, why is it so important to assess rumen health in the spring? And what are some things that producers should look for when evaluating rumen function right now? Like, why look at it right now, and what should you look for?
It comes back to, again, don't want to hammer the point too much, but it is ties into rumen health. The cow's there to digest fibrous feedstuffs. Mm-hmm. So if she's not set up to do that, and say she's got poor protein supplementation or not the right type of protein supplementation, you're not going to be happy with that digestibility, that fiber, and that ties back into the rumen health piece. Because rumen health, okay, you start thinking about colonization of fiber. How can we do that through the microbes? And if you're going to come back in and say, well, I'm going to use some type of energy because I'm going to try to put some energy back into my diet and get those cows moving again for me, that can be challenging. There's a lot of research out there that shows, 4 or 5 pounds of energy, wrong type of energy is going to be detrimental. If you get the right type of energy, very, very beneficial, very beneficial. So there are things that we can do a lot differently today, because we have these byproduct type feeds that are available to us, whether it's DDG, soy hulls, corn gluten feed. Those are all extremely good sources of not only energy, but in those situations, protein kind of comes along for the ride almost. So it makes it a lot easier to navigate some challenges in terms of, monitoring and maintaining good rumen health, so you get optimal fiber digestibility. If you're not going to do that, one of the indications that telltale sign is, what are the stools on those animals looking like? If you got really dry stools coming out the back end, that's number one indication of you got a very, very slow passage rate going on.
Okay. So, maybe a producer has that. How can they make an adjustment to their feeding programs to optimize that rumen function, you know, benefiting the cow and their calf growth? Like, if in that specific instance, like, what would you recommend that they do?
Well, you're first going to dive in and figure out what they're feeding, right? And if it's poor quality roughages, that's generally the culprit in that situation, which there's a good chunk of cows out there that are going to consume poor quality roughages for a time period there. You got to come back and say, okay, how am I going to supplement my protein? A lot of people like to use self-supplementation programs. Others still will want to go out there and do it every other day type concept with some type of a range cube. So it comes back to what type of protein am I going to be supplementing, right? And is that really going to drive fermentation? And then you got to figure out, okay, well, what other feedstuffs do I have to work with at this point in time? Those are all limitations within an operation that have to be considered when you're building that program. And when you're in that position, you're already behind the eight ball, right? You should have been looking at that like right now and figuring those things out, because not only you got market conditions that you got to consider there in terms of, okay, what are my commodity prices doing? What are my cattle prices doing? If I'm going to have, you know, cattle prices right like right now, man, they're fantastic, right? Nobody's complaining. Yeah. Nor should they be.
Some people are complaining.
Yeah. Well, there is that. There's always some, I guess. But I really feel like there's a lot of opportunity there for people to do different things in terms of managing their calf herd with cattle prices the way they are right now. And
I agree. Yeah. But yeah, there's always people complaining.
For sure.
So you brought up the poor quality forages. I mean, that plays a big role in nutrition, right? If they're just eating scrub brush and things like that. So what can you advise? Like, well, first off, can you talk about the role that supplementing plays if they're eating poor forage and how to improve that forage digestibility and how that affects overall herd health? Kind of how does supplementation play into that?
Yeah. So we go back in time a little bit and you can look at some research. It's in what we call the NRC book. It's nutrient requirements for beef cows or beef animals in general. And that's going to give you a pretty good indication of what you need for both energy as well as protein needs and minerals and vitamins, et cetera. So TDN, et cetera. That's where you got to start. And if I'm in that situation, I come back to how much degradable protein do you need is probably a good starting point. That book that I just mentioned, the NRC, kind of defines it, you know, for us. And we probably need somewhere around 7 to 7.5% of the protein requirement of, you know, it's probably going to be around 8-9% total protein needs of that animal. So you're talking 85%, give or take, needs to be degradable protein needs in order to feed the bugs. Mm-hmm. So that's the number one rule that we talk about all the time. Feed the bugs, feed the bugs. They will do the rest to a certain degree. What can we utilize from, you know, other sources of supplementation needs? Obviously, there are different tools in the toolbox that are available today for the beef cow man that, as I alluded to earlier, maybe it's some type of a yeast product that can go in there and utilize fiber. And there are those types of tools out there where they actually will attach to the fiber. Mm-hmm. And they break down that fiber. So think of a saw in your toolkit. Mm-hmm. It's going to go in there and it's going to break open that particle of fiber. So that lignin coating, if you will, is being chewed in half by these yeast and exposing that the innards of the fiber, which is cellulose, which is what you want. That breaks down into energy very quickly by the VFAs and the bugs, or I should say the bugs and then to VFAs.
So I know it's just now spring. I understand that. And we're talking about fall and summer will be here in a month, basically. It'll be hot. And it's probably already hot where you live, but I don't want it to be hot in Kansas. But as summer approaches, is how I'll say that, there are some producers I know or I feel that don't necessarily know how to assess the quality of their pasture. That's just not something they're well versed in, or maybe they haven't ever had to do it before, but they need to. You know, how can producers do that? Is that soil testing? Is that testing old hay? Yeah. Do you have any advice or tips on how producers can assess the quality of their pasture to see if they need the supplement?
For sure. So you can go out there and do forage analysis and do some clippings and send those off and start doing some benchmark work is what I refer to it as. And you got to build yourself a little library over those summer pastures and, you know, start building that database, because then you start getting a true read on what you're dealing with and how can you manage it. And you might pick up some inflection points where, you know, hey, I've got really protein or high protein right now. Mm-hmm. Then that becomes a question. Okay, are you matching up peak milk production, which occurs roughly 60 days after you calf? Is that lined up with peak forage production? Mm-hmm. And so now we got to start looking at, okay, when does that really occur? We think it occurs now, but do you have the numbers to support that? Or are we just relying off of what we've learned through the course of time? And I'm a big proponent of, you know, one, having information to make decisions on. So that's a critical step right there. If you're not doing it, I would encourage people to do that right there.
It's hard to manage what you can't measure or what you're not. Exactly. Do you have any other practical tips on, you know, managing forage and supplements like in tandem so that cows get nutrition they need, especially as we go into summer and maybe there's always a drought somewhere. Unfortunately, Right. Somebody is always in a drought. But any practical tips about that as we look into summer?
So there's some new research out, again, going back into some new products that are available to the beef industry that improving fiber digestibility through a yeast product, for example. There's some research out there that will clearly speak to this topic right here very easily, where we have this mindset, and we kind of talked about it earlier, where green grass is beautiful. I don't need to do anything. Go check the mineral feeder, hopefully once a week, and see what's going on. But after that, put it on cruise control, right? Well, that's not necessarily the case. If you go back to what we discussed about genetic potential and lining things up with passage rate and digestibilities, going in there and supplementing at key critical times with some new tools that are available to us that will actually improve fiber digestibility. There was a project out there that showed a 22-pound increase on summer pasture for weeds. So that's a bunch.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a lot at, I don't know, $3 a pound.
Yeah.
Pounds increase. That's a lot. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
I want to get to the fiber digestibility in just a second, because you've mentioned that term quite a bit. And so I don't want to ignore that. But I want to go back just to kind of close the loop on the strategic planning. Can you speak a bit about the long-term benefits of all the strategic planning, of thinking about, you know, the low quality forages they may be grazing on in the fall, the part of the summer, looking at your forage availability and maybe supplementing to get those things to work in tandem. Can you speak just a bit about the long-term benefits of thinking beyond just your own ranch gate, and not yours specifically, but a producer looking beyond their own ranch gate, and like what value it has to think of it things in a long term rather than just, I got to feed the cows today. Tomorrow, I got to feed the cows and fix the fence. Can you speak a bit about that?
Sure. So I encourage people to sit down and look at an annual event calendar and kind of project out what we're going to be doing, and get a game plan together so you can manage all four quarters accordingly. And this bit of saying, okay, when do I need supplement? When do I not need supplement? Because that's your primary input cost on cow-calf is supplementation. Right. So it becomes a timing and critical timing, if you will. And it's all going to be driven on forage quality. But think of it like this, that degradable protein is essentially your gas pedal.
Okay.
Your carbohydrate, which is your forage, is the gas. Mm-hmm. And so I can speed up or slow down based on what conditions we have, time of year, et cetera, based on degradable protein and how much I'm going to put into that animal. So it becomes a little bit of the needs of the moment based on nutrient requirements, gestation, first period, second period, third trimester, et cetera, and then going into peak forage production, and is that lined up with your peak milk production? A lot of times I see that not being in line. We try to rush that because whatever. We got marketing decisions that are driving this discussion. Right. You know, maybe people are calving in February because they've got marketing decisions that are at play. So those all come into discussion as well.
For sure. Calving in February is not.
That's not for the faint of heart, right?
No, it's not. No, it is not. We do not. There's a reason we don't do that. So, well, I said we get back to fiber digestibility because, like I said, you've mentioned that quite a bit. And so if you could, I think feel like that term is pretty self-explanatory, the digestibility of fiber. But how does that affect the overall nutrient profile of the diet? Is that something you could speak
to? Yeah. So if we look at it from the standpoint, think of a nutrient pie is what I like to refer to it as. You got a circle and it's a pie shape. Okay. So there's going to be 8 to 12% of that pie, that piece is going to be, let's call it protein requirement. And we can argue if it needs to be 8 or 12 all day long. Then you've got another 2 or 3% sliver of the pie that's basically going to be made up of your vitamins and trace minerals needs. What's the rest of that pie, that nutrient pie, going to be made up of? Energy.
Okay.
So we have to optimize fiber digestibility, because that's what, in my opinion, the rancher's truly growing out there. He's growing a grass crop. So how are we going to optimize fiber digestibility on that crop to parlay into peak performance on our animals? And so there becomes the yin and the yang kind of concept. How do you find that sweet spot? And it really boils down to, are you measuring your forages like we talked about earlier? What type of forages are you bringing in for supplementation? Are they known sources, or are you just buying by cost per ton? Because that's a dangerous thing to be doing, you know. You don't think of cost per ton. Well, that's great. It can be sticker shock. But what if we come back and look at that from a digestibility standpoint? I can sell you X over here for cost per ton that's pretty reasonable, or I can sell you something over here that's a little bit more expensive in my cost per unit of energy. Two different things there. My miles per gallon over here on a more expensive forage source may be a whole lot better than the cheaper source.
Right. You know, the value of your, I mean, the value of what you're getting, right?
What yes.
Quality over quantity.
Cost per gallon type concept, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we got to look at.
So I'm assuming that improving your fiber digestibility leads to bigger and better things.
Well, for sure it's going to impact your bottom line, and you're going to become more economically efficient, let's say that.
There. And so can you speak about that? Maybe weight gain, more efficient digestion, bigger wean weights, you know, that kind of
thing. Yep. So if we look at, go back to NDF, that's a critical piece of fiber, right? NDF digestibility is what you're going to get back from one of your labs out here in the industry. And so you look at that and we say, okay, is this good? Is that bad? You know, depending on the forage that you measured, how are we going to optimize that? And if we can improve NDF digestibility by 4 or 5 points, you know, that's worth a lot in overall performance on that animal, because that NDF digestibility means that we've taken, okay, we're going to get a little geeky here on you, but we're going to say cellulose. Okay. What is cellulose? So that's, starch type concept here. You know, it's energy for the animal, and that's going to break down through the bug's digestion into what we call volatile fatty acids. Mm-hmm. Example of volatile fatty acids, acetic acid, vinegar.
Okay.
That's what is driving rumen energy. And when you drive rumen energy, you drive overall animal production. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do, is optimize forage digestibility in that rumen, because once it leaves the rumen, there's not a whole lot of forage digestibility that's going to take place. There's a little bit in the hindgut, but not a whole lot.
So it's, I mean, vitally important that it gets it done there.
And yes.
So
yep.
You're optimizing weights and profitability and things like that. And so right now there's a lot of positives happening in the beef industry right now in terms of prices and things like that, but there's also some challenges. And so I was just wondering if you would touch on some of those challenges, or maybe I can tell, you know, why we've got weather issues. People are trying to decide whether to rebuild the herd or just whether to take advantage of these high prices we've got right now. Can you give any advice based on the challenges that we've got right now to the producers that might be listening?
Yeah, weather is probably one of the bigger ones, right?
It was a big sigh before
you. Yeah. If these weather patterns that we're in right now, if they continue to hold, I mean, it's tough. And when you do get rained, like there's, I can think of a couple of years ago, it was 2023. I think you guys up there in Kansas in June got, you know, almost a year's worth of rain in 1 month, right?
Yeah. But our rain specifically where I live, we get about the same amount of rain as Northwest Ohio in that lake, but it comes in like 4 months rather than spread out.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. If there's a way for I could store it, you know.
Right. Right. And so you get back to, I'm growing grass as a rancher, right? And so if I get that, those rains timely and I get enough grass production, maybe it's a good idea to kind of think about having a conversation. Let's wean early and inventory grass, you know, and let that cow go out there and be my mechanism for harvesting that roughage. And I can feed some critical degradable protein along the way to make sure we're optimizing fiber digestibility and maybe include some of these other cool products out there, these yeast products that are available to us that are going to enhance digestibility. And you can stretch a long ways then. At the same time, your calf is, you know, you wean early, that calf is going to be very, very efficient at conversion right there. And so whether or not you're going to try to sell it straight off the cow or you're going to keep it for 45 days, 60 days, whatever the case may be, you set up the right program with the right type of byproduct feeds that are available to us, you're going to see some nice performances on those calves as well. So that's one area that ties back into weather management and recognizing those patterns early on and taking advantage of them. Probably another time that is often overlooked is what can we do from a standpoint of can we run open range, I guess, type conditions is what I'm talking right now. So if you're in a situation where you can stretch that cow a little bit and make her go hustle, those are all good things to do. And you can tie in supplementation programs to allow that cow to maybe move a little bit more and do a little bit better job of harvesting some forages and some other rougher areas that maybe she might not want to go to if you're supplementing her every other day. So, and you mentioned it earlier, you're almost in a unique situation, you know, where you've got forages, green forages to help you through during the winter months. And that those are really, really nice to have. And you can change your operation very quickly there.
We do stockpile. We do a lot of rotational grazing and stockpiling.
Oh, gosh, yes.
To get us through. But it gets, I mean, it's, we're not as hot as Texas, but we have a stretch where we'll have triple digit heat and, you know, high 70-80% humidity. And fescue does not particularly like triple digit heat very much. So it's, you know, you get, we also have to mix in we've got a lot of native prairie that we run on as well when fescue has decided to take a break. So yeah. It's definitely a counterbalance, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And you bring up a good point there in terms of rotation. You know, certain times, if you got enough, if you got the right situation, the right setup, pasture rotation is very, very good tool to utilize.
We try to take care of the grass as best we can because we need it to take care of us. So.
Oh, for sure.
It's time for our famous three.
Well, we've come to the part of the episode here where I ask the same questions of every guest. And I did give you I have to tell our audience, I gave Dr. Carter so that he wasn't just, you know, caught in the headlights. So the first one of these questions is, what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource? Could be a book, a website, a movie, could be McClintock or something like that. It could be, yeah. It could be a person, you know, what's your favorite beef or cattle related resource?
So as a scientist, you know, you end up reading a lot. And so I pull my information a lot from, depending on what I'm looking at, but the Journal of Animal Science is a great resource. There's a professional Journal of Animal Science out there that's a little bit more applied oriented and not quite so deep on the science piece. And then I mentioned earlier, the nutrient requirement, the NRC, that's a good tool resource to fall back on. And in addition to all these, geeky textbooks that I still have today.
I still have all my textbooks from my husband and I both. I stopped after my master's, but he went on and got his PhD. So we have multiple degrees worth of textbooks still in the attic. And yeah. I'm having a garage sale this weekend. I'm like, can I put these in the garage sale?
Yeah.
We need these.
Yeah.
they stayed in the boxes. So
yeah. Good. Yeah,
that's a great references, the journals for sure.
Yeah.
So transitioning to a little bit lighter reading, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle related book or one that you are currently reading?
I like to read. So I grew up reading Louis L'Amour, Zane Grey's. Yeah, so that influenced me a lot early on as a kid. And then you move into, for light reading today, you know, there's Jack Carr series out there about his character, James Reese, you know, Navy SEAL type, okay, type atmosphere. I read through those. And then there's another good one as far as a series. This is about Peter Capstick. He was a professional guide hunter over in Africa at the turn of the century, and he had a really unique perspective on what Africa was like at that point in time. So those are some of the books that I kind of fall back to. And then there's always the one-off books that I read. You know, it's constantly. I don't have enough time to read. Let's put it that way.
I feel that way as well. Occasionally I walk into a bookstore and I think how sad it makes me that I will never read all of the books.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So. I feel that. I have never had anybody answer with I just looked up Peter Capstick. I've never had anybody answer with that kind of, with that genre of book. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Great read. Good stories to tell you there, for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the titles there. I'm going to have to check some of those out.
Yeah, you start with Death in the Tall Grass and you'll get hooked on them pretty quick.
That's the one that's listed there first. So maybe it's the best one there. So,
yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then so the last one is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what is a characteristic they possess that has led them to be successful? You don't have to say the name of the person, but just something that a characteristic in that person that they, you know, they have.
Well, I think you got to have a huge desire, drive, whatever you want to label it, to really push yourself and push yourself to the limits that, you know, you feel like, okay, I can't do anymore, I'm going to break, you know, type concept, and then push yourself some more. Because in this line of work, everybody's, it's really a small industry when you get down to it. And I know it kind of be hard to wrap your head around that, but from a nutritionist standpoint, it's a small group of people, really, considering how big the beef industry is. And so if you're going to be in the game, as I always like to say, you better make sure you can compete with the other people that are in the game.
Yeah.
And that means, it requires a lot of time in the practice pen, so to speak, to put it in cowboy terminology here. If you're a roper or something like that, you know,
you
spend some time in the practice pen.
For sure. And it is a small industry. I constantly, you know, we're spread across the country, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of us, but when you get down to the brass tacks, it really is, you know, a small group. And that's for sure. You have iron sharpens iron. You got to be sharp. Your neighbors are, for sure. So.
Yes. And typically if I associate with people that I feel that I look up to in the industry, as far as my peers are concerned, they've been a great influence on me and helping me become better at my craft. So that's always a blessing.
Well, I appreciate your answers on those. I always like hearing a little bit about the non-professional side of our guests.
Yeah.
All the questions and time we have for today. Dr. Karjus, I want to thank you so much for joining us, for sharing your time and your talent, your thoughts with us. And thank you also to Lalamond Animal Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. If listeners have questions for you or want to learn more about all of our discussion today, digestible, forage digestibility, nutrition, strategic planning, any of that, where can they go to do that?
Yeah, I point them to our website, obviously, Lalamond Animal Nutrition. .com and you're going to find what you need there. And if you want somebody to reach out to you, just drop us a note there and somebody will reach back out to you and contact you, and we can have further discussions that way. But we sure would enjoy the opportunity to visit with people.
Okay, perfect. Well, for our audience who is not in front of a computer at the moment and is listening on your mobile device, I have written, put Lalamond Animal Nutrition in the footnotes at the bottom of the episode, so you guys can feel free to go through and click through to the website. Dr. Karjus, again, thank you for being here, for sharing your time with us. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in, and we'll meet you back here next week on the Beef Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent with Appa Time Zone Hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.